Blog Talk Radio.
Ma'at Hotep, greetings to everyone. You are now in tune to this week's edition of New Day, Resurrection and Liberation. My name is Empress Chi, and as usual, it's always wonderful to be here with you this evening. This is our regular edition of our radio program. For those of you who are familiar with our show, you may know that this week we had a couple of special editions. And, of course, those special editions was dealing with the issue of Mumia Abu-Jamal. And if you have not heard the latest news, well, we certainly will provide you with that tonight because Mumia has, in fact, been placed in general population. And you all know that that was indeed the struggle that we were pursuing, and we have, in fact, won. So while that is a victory, meaning he was in solitary confinement from the time they took him off of death row, he was still in solitary confinement. Well, at least now he is in general population, and now we can also begin to see perhaps a bit of progress taking place. And, of course, the next step is to fight to bring him home. So we're going to talk a little bit about that tonight, of course, and give you some insight into what happened this Thursday, which there was a press conference and also a caravan of folk went up to Camp Hill. And fortunately, I was there for both of those events and can tell you firsthand exactly what happened. And I can tell you going up to Camp Hill was a trip. But before we go into tonight's program, we always give thanks and praises to our Creator. And, of course, we are always very, very appreciative of our freedom-fighting ancestors. Also tonight, we're going to talk about the environment. You know, here at New Day Resurrection Liberation, it's really always about providing you with information. And we were forwarded some information recently that we felt we need to share with you because we need to know more about our environment, the environment, and how Black folks need to be more involved in these issues. Usually when you go places throughout the country, the people who are speaking out about environmental issues, and you know, here in Pennsylvania, we have something called environmental racism, and in other states as well. But usually when you hear these things really being dealt with, it's usually not folks that look like us. So we've got to step our game up. And fortunately, we received information about a sister who has been doing just that for the past 30 years plus and is now still ongoingly involved in fighting for communities, fighting for the people to make certain that this issue of how the effects of the toxins and other things in our communities, and particularly with where she's located, and that is in Mississippi, but we know all over the country that especially in Black communities, there's some serious stuff going on. Water, air, the soil, you name it. We need to know more about it and what it is that we can do about it. So we're going to talk very soon live with Sister Penny White, and she's going to tell us about some of the work that she and her colleagues are doing and some of what we need to do to also bring this issue forward. But before we do that, of course, as we said again, it's been a victory this week, although it was a rough one. Mumia was in the hole for roughly 9 weeks in solitary confinement in torturous conditions. And we're going to tell you more about that, but fortunately, blessfully, he is now in general population. And again, it's the power of the people.
We who believe in freedom and not wisdom. We who believe in freedom, we who believe in freedom, and that freedom cannot be.
sweet honey in the rocks. We who believe in freedom cannot, will not, never, ever, ever rest. And as we say, for us to have peace, there must be justice. Well, with that said, this week, of course, as we indicated earlier, we had the opportunity to go to the press conference that was held on Thursday here in Philadelphia at the Friends Service Center. You can go to the archives and hear some of the press conference. We did broadcast it live, and we were planning to broadcast once we got up to Camp Hill, but unfortunately, because as you go up to Upper State, Pennsylvania, your signal is not very good, so I wasn't able to really connect. But I can tell you firsthand, because I was there along with Sister Johanna, Sister Pam Africa, Sister Ramona Africa, and just, you know, a whole slew of folks, Teresa Schultz. We went into the administrative area there and had 5,000 petitions ready to deliver. Of course, they would not send down a official executive from the facility, but they did send down the head of security. And family, I can tell you it was a very interesting interaction, a very awakening interaction. If you thought that because these people smile at you while you're kind of going through your day-to-day work or school or whatever, and they kind of nod and smile, well, I can tell you, you go a little bit out of the general population or the urban environment, and it's a whole other flavor going on. You think we're in 2012. Well, just a few hours away from Philadelphia, you would think you was back in maybe 1912. But nevertheless, we're going to tell you more about that very shortly. We suspect that Mumia will be able to resume his commentaries very, very soon. He hasn't been able to do that for the past couple of weeks. And so we want to share one of his last commentaries that he wrote out and, of course, had someone to read it, as that has been happening for the past couple of weeks. And this week we have reading one of Mumia's commentaries that just came out the other day, as a matter of fact. This was also read at the press conference. This is Noam Chomsky, who's reading this one. It's called Of Idiots and Sages. Now, again, we suspect that Mumia will be able to do his own commentaries very, very soon, as he has been doing for many years now. But in the meantime, other folks have stepped in, and, you know, he was able to write his writings out, and they've been able to record it that way. And we want to share this last one with you, or this latest one with you, because it just so happened that one of the things that we feel helped to push Mumia getting in the general population is the fact that attention was brought to this particular situation of him still being in the hole. This was taken into another arena. Now, if you, again, are familiar with New Day Resurrection and Liberation, you would have heard us say here for the past couple of weeks that we've been really planning and organizing to get ready to take our first summit, the first MWM, Africana Women's World Summit, is going to Africa in December, the first of five summits. And that, of course, is to begin presenting not just our situation and issues here in the States, but to connect our sisters globally. And so we are preparing to do that. But in doing that, while we are focusing on the issues of our sisters, we are also going to be focusing on issues that is relevant to our people here in the States, especially those issues that are internationally inclined. And with that said, we are preparing to do a major session on political prisoners. And this is going to be brought in by sisters primarily, because we want the world to see that as mothers, as women, as daughters, we want them to see and hear our voices as it pertains to the issue of political prisoners, the prison industrialized complex, African reparations, restitution, and retribution, and also what we now know is, in fact, genocide here in the U.S. So we're going to tell you more about that very shortly. In the meantime, before we get ready for our live line interview tonight, we want to share this commentary from Mumia Abu-Jamal, voiced by Noam Chomsky.
Solitary confinement is simply torture. It's been well known for a long time. It's savagery. Mass incarceration is an incredible crime. All of these things are a true international scandal. It is a striking case, but it's far more general. The maximum security prisons in the United States are horrendous. I mean, they make Guantanamo look like a vacation resort. Same with death row. Executions in the United States are far beyond the norm of any few countries, except ones we prefer not to mention, which use the death penalty either at all or anything like the U.S. does. Noam Chomsky for Mumia Abu-Jamal. The prison and government officials are trying to censor and silence Mumia Abu-Jamal. I stand as one of many Americans who believe that there's a tremendous value in his voice being heard. I and others will fight to make sure that both his voice and his body are free. How much is your child worth? How much is your grandchild worth? Now, these are not trick questions. They arise from the news that North Carolina had recently announced cash compensation to thousands of survivors of their state sterilization program that ran from 1929 to 1974, an astonishing 45 years. North Carolina was but one of the many, mostly southern states, that sterilized people whom it considered as defective. In this, they were supported by authorities as august as the U.S. Supreme Court, which in its now infamous book, the Bell 1927 decision, found that a state could properly sterilize its citizens, and citizens had no constitutional right to oppose it. For, in the words of Justice Oliver Wendell Holmes, three generations of imbeciles are enough. A North Carolina task force recommended payment of $50,000 for each survivor. North Carolina shouldn't be the whipping boy here, for such practices took place nationally with federal government support. Historians and scholars, Mary Frances Berry and John Brasingame, in their 1982 work, Long Memory, The Black Experience in America, New York, Oxford University Press, they tell us that as late as the 1970s, the United States Department of Health, Education, and Welfare was forcing 100,000 to 150,000 people to be sterilized annually. Over 90% of these people were black. This horrific state practice and the U.S. Supreme Court's chilling reasoning in support of it gives us some insight into how social prejudices and attitudes percolate into all sections of society, and despite their self-evident madness, are seen by seemingly enlightened sectors as perfectly reasonable, only to be later tarnished as repellent with the passage of time. If a state or nation could sterilize its own so-called citizens, deny people the right and ability to have children, what is such a state or a nation but a dictatorship of arrogance and power? One day, and perhaps sooner than we suppose, we shall look back at the phenomenon of mass incarceration and the prison industrial complex as proof of a mad society. Perhaps such a future state will pay reparations, compensation to the survivors in 75 or 80 years, if any survive. Noam Chomsky for Mumia How did you know?
Indeed, that was surely right on time, right on point. And as you can tell, you know, it is no secret that the issue of reparations is one that's not only valid, it's one that must be pursued. And now even more so, you know, the Black Women's Defense League has been talking now for the past couple of years about the issue of eugenics and how many of our women were, in fact, forced to be sterilized. And the National Campaign for the Elimination of Violence and Abuse of Africana Women and Girls is indeed underway. We're going to tell you more about that very shortly as well. But for right now, what we want to do is get ready to go to our live line, because as we indicated earlier, I mean, there's so many issues and topics that we have to address, but we definitely want to tonight talk about one that deals with what some call environmental issues. You know, these things too are human rights, for lack of a better word. They're natural rights, to be honest with you. And at some point, we're going to talk more about why we have to begin to assert the language that is going to be the best for the future. But for right now, we say human rights because we know that that is the jargon that has to be utilized in various situations and in various courts. And certainly, the environment is not only a part of our human rights, but it's also part of our responsibility to safeguard it as best as we possibly can for ourselves as well as for the incoming generation. Well, I'm sure many of you can agree, there's a whole lot going on right about now that indicates we're in some serious trouble. But the fact and the point has to be, what are we going to do about it? How prepared will we be in the future? And certainly, what kinds of things can we be doing now? So what we're going to do is we're going to go to our live line, and joining us again is a sister who has done a tremendous amount of work in the Mississippi area in particular, but this issue is something that is, of course, a national issue, and it is a wonderful thing to see Black folks coming forward and really having a visible voice in the dialogue and in the work. And I mean, this has been happening for a while because there's even, you know, Black organization, the Black Environmentalist Group and so on, but you don't hear much about this. So we make it a point to make certain that we let folks know that we do indeed have people all over the country that are doing some very serious kinds of things. We just now have got to, you know, even, like I said, step it up. We've got to get even better and make certain that we're in these rooms lobbying. We're in these rooms doing the other kinds of dialogues and really creating the type of advocacy and activism that is necessary for our people. And that's what the Million Women Movement is also about, making certain that particularly our sisters now take a very, very critical role in some of these areas. And that's what you're going to see us do. So without further ado, we're going to go to our live line. And again, joining us is a sister who has a background actually in biology and chemistry, and for the past 30 years have been working in this field, in this area of concern in terms of the environment, and actually has her own laboratory. That's right. So we're going to talk with, and I'll just let you know that we're going to open up the lines for you if you have some questions or whatever that you might want to ask our sister. You're going to be able to do that probably in about a half an hour, I say. But for now, we want to hear about the work of the organization that she's involved in. And again, some of the things that we need to become more acquainted with and more aware of. So without further ado, I want all of you to meet Sister Tenny White. Sister Tenny, are you there?
I am here.
Great.
Thank you.
Greetings to you this evening.
Thank you. Thank you for inviting me to the show.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. Well, we have, I mean, so we, our listening family is probably one of the most incredible group of folks out there. They're all over the country. Some are even in other parts of, you know, not even in the U.S., that is. And so, you know, we're very appreciative that we've been on now for 4 years. and have a wonderful group of folks that tune in and pass the word on and do work. They actually do some work, and the work they do works. So, you know, we're thankful. So, again, welcome to New Day Resurrection and Liberation. And tell us a little bit about you.
Well, I'm the little short black lady with glasses here in Mississippi, trying to bring the environmental news to the people that are in harm's way. And most of the people that are in harm's way are poor black people. And they're in harm's way because they don't know how the system works. And I was telling a nice lady from EPA, who was a contractor, that the best kept secret in the Southeast was how to contact your environmental regulatory agency. They keep it real quiet. They don't want you to know how to bring your problems to them because they don't want to address your problems if you're poor and you're black.
Wow. Yep. Well, that seems to be more of the rule than the exception, you know, in many incidents. So it's not surprising at all. And certainly, you know, something like environment, I mean, you know, many of our people have to deal with just the day-to-day reality of survival, you know, so to kind of, you know, look into other issues, they know that it's just not something that would be, you know, our readiness to kind of get involved in it or to pay closer attention to it. For the most part, it just wasn't there because on a day-to-day basis, you got to worry about dealing with everything else. So it's really wonderful to hear that you and others have been so consistent and adamant in making certain that, you know, you stay abreast of what's going on and report it back. So tell us a little bit about the organization that you're involved in.
The Coalition of Communities for Environmental Justice is an organization that is a coalition of grassroots organizations here in the Southeast. We have members in Tennessee. We have members in Florida, in Georgia, in Alabama, here in Mississippi, because we are all experiencing the same thing. And we all keep crying out to our elected officials. We keep crying out to the regulatory agency. You're leaving us in contamination, and we're dying early. It's not God's will that we die. It's the people that we that are tasked with protecting our health, our well-being. They're allowing us to die simply because we're not telling them we don't want to die. So my job is to get the news out that it's not God's will that you are dying. You are living in contamination. You've been living in contamination for years. And so you have cancer and you have heart disease. And this is happening throughout the southeastern United States. Actually, it's nationwide. All of our environmental justice communities and the way that EPA classifies your community as environmental justice is if you have an elevated infant mortality. So if the infant mortality in your area is greater than 6, then you are classified as an environmental justice community. Now, we have environmental justice communities here in Mississippi where the infant mortality is 24.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
So we're looking at 6 times and 4 times the national average. And what
wow.
we're trying to do with the coalition is we want our environmental justice communities to experience the same infant mortality as other places in the nation. If everybody else in the nation is experiencing 6, then that's what we want for our communities. We don't want our babies to die. But there are countless studies out there commissioned by Environmental Protection Agency and Centers for Disease Control that say black people are at risk for environmental contamination because they live in it longer and they're exposed to more of it. And by the time they get around to rescue, your community is in crisis.
Wow. Now, Sister Kenny, what are some of the causes of the contamination?
Most of the causes when people are living there for like decades is from industry that has been there since the turn of the century. And we call that legacy pollution. And if you are polluting prior to the 1960s, prior to the creation of the Environmental Protection Agency, then you've been exposing people to unacceptable levels, uncontrolled levels of contamination that was dangerous to their health. And there was nobody to stop you because it was just the practice of the day. So if you were pouring solvents out of your back door that got into the groundwater and people were drinking it and the babies were getting cleft palates and the women were dying from breast cancer, well, it's highly unlikely that you would know until EPA came into existence and they said, well, my goodness, you remember Love Canal, but remember now, these are middle-class white people. Their children started getting sick, and they started getting sick, and their pets started getting sick. And that resulted in the creation of the Environmental Protection Agency. And it works very well for well-off white people. It just doesn't work very well for poor black people.
So now, this commission that has recently been formed with Dr. Myers, tell us a little bit about that, and what are some of the things, the projections that you foresee happening with that particular commission? What are some of your specific goals and objectives for now?
One of our specific goals is to bring the message out that our African-American community, we're facing genocide. If we don't begin to control the situations, the chemicals that we're exposed to, the at-risk behavior that's occurring in our communities, that we won't exist in the next 50 years because we'll all be dead. Mm. And Dr. Myers has been saying for almost 20 years that our African-American community were engaged in a fight against genocide. You're locking up our men, or you're killing our young men. Our babies have cancer. Our women have impaired fertility issues because we're living in contamination fence line. And it's either legacy or it's ongoing, and our regulatory agencies are looking the other way. EPA recently published a toxic belief inventory report for the nation. We have counties here in the state of Mississippi that are putting out millions of pounds of hazardous materials into the air. And one of my watchwords is, my God, where are we going to go to avoid breathing the air? Yeah. So we have elevated levels of asthma. And one of Dr. Myers' fellow physicians, he lost three patients last year that had asthma, attacks that were simply uncontrolled. Mm-hmm. So all of these ways and means that we're dying, and we need to be aware of what those triggers are. We need to understand the why, and then we need to start talking about the why. It needs to stop being the dirty secret. Mm-hmm. And so Dr. Myers and I are trying to come together to ensure that the dirty secret gets uncovered.
Wow. So recently, from what I was able to look at earlier, there has been an effort, or there is an effort, to bring this issue to the attention of the Obama administration. How is that going?
We had some very difficult time trying to get our people to get on the Obama website and sign that petition. And so Dr. Myers advised us to go to another petition site, and then it was much easier for our followers to get in and start signing on to that petition. So as soon as we can reach our number, we're going to be petitioning the White House for a meeting so that we can bring our concerns there. We've had several meetings with our EPA officials in Region 4, and they cover the Southeast, and certain assurances were made that, first of all, they would engage the community, especially when the communities are at risk and they've been dealing with contamination for decades. Mm-hmm. And so the first thing that happened was they did. they issued, EPA Region 4 issued some final orders for one particular chemical company in Hattiesburg, Mississippi, with absolutely no community input. Mm-hmm. We have 8,000 affected people by this company that's gone out of business and left legacy pollution in this community, and not one person from the community was engaged with a comment.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Unbelievable. So have you been able to just look at any of the other reports, for example, from some of the other maybe southern states, the rural areas? Have you been able to get any of that kind of information just to kind of do some comparative analysis?
I have. It is extremely disappointing to me that a county in Tennessee called Dixon County, Tennessee, it took them 10 years to determine that the children in the county that were being born with cleft palate were being exposed to unacceptable levels of contamination in their drinking water. And do you know what EPA did for this? They gave the white people bottled water. That was the resolution.
I mean, needless to say, I'm really not too surprised, but nevertheless, when you hear these types of stories, it still can't help but to be not only disheartening, but, you know, brings you to a point of almost outrage, you know.
We should be outraged. As a people, we should be outraged.
How can we help to educate our people a bit more effectively and a bit more extensively? What are some of the suggestions or some of the ways that you think we can begin to really bring about greater awareness and then certainly, you know, greater involvement?
Well, the number one thing that all of your listeners can do is go to the EPA website. It's www.epa.gov. And just explore the site. They have this wonderful tool that says, my backyard, what am I being exposed to? What am I living next to? You need to find out. You need to know if you get up every morning and you're coughing or you can't breathe or you're being inundated with odors that affect your quality of life. If you can't work outside, if you're afraid to grow food, if your soil is contaminated, you've got to bring in clean soil in order to have a garden. These are all things that the questions that can be answered at the EPA website. And so that would be the very first place that people need to start. And that way they can access their zip code and see if it's classified as an environmental justice community. You may be living in an environmental justice community and not know.
Mm-hmm. What got you interested in being involved in this particular issue or in this particular area?
What got me involved as being part of a community advocate is the community in Hattiesburg exposed to legacy pollution. And I just simply looked at the CDC data for infant mortality for Hattiesburg. It was horrendous. I was outraged. I accused my local regulatory agency of killing babies. I just couldn't see any other way that it could be. You have an infant mortality that's three times higher than the national average, and you're not outraged, and you're not doing anything about it. And nobody living in the community is aware of it. And frankly, I told them it was criminal. I felt that it was criminal behavior. You didn't try to clean it up, and you didn't try to tell the people so that they could protect themselves, or at least those who were able, get out. None of that happened. And so I explained to my local regulatory agency that I would stop advocating for these people as soon as they stopped killing my babies.
Wow. Now, recently there was, I think maybe April of last year or thereabouts, you were able to make a little headway with the one of the government agencies there with having a proclamation drawn up. Tell us a little bit about that.
We helped craft that proclamation with one of our state representatives, Representative Gregory Holloway, because in his district there is also legacy pollution left over from the 1940s, where they have polychlorinated bisphenol, PCBs. They're not in the drinking water. They were throughout this poor black community. The ditch ran through the community. The children played in the ditch. People were sick. The attorneys had come in with their environmental tort and really continued to disenfranchise the people. So Representative Holloway asked what could he possibly do to assist his people. And I said, well, first of all, let's define what environmental justice is. We certainly know what environmental injustice is. So let's try to define for the state of Mississippi what environmental justice is. And, of course, we couldn't get a law on the book, but he was cooperative with getting a proclamation issued. And we're back at the state legislature this year trying to get some teeth into our environmental rules and regulations that allow the affected people some voice in the proceedings. So this was a step in the right direction, and we certainly want to thank Representative Gregory Holloway for all of his assistance, because his people in Crystal Springs, their drinking water was affected. It was contaminated, and the people were continuing to drink it, and our regulatory agency had not told them, because they said, and I quote, well, we shut down the well. It's still in the plume. We shut down the well. They're checking it once a month. I said, well, what happens if you pull a slug of contamination up? Because you've got, you know, you have wells still pulling from this contaminated aquifer. And they looked at me as if I had grown 2 heads. So they have relocated their drinking water wells outside the path of contamination, and 15 miles outside of town is where they found clean drinking water. Now, prior to 2 years ago, they were pulling from a contaminated drinking water source. I had never seen anything like it in my life. And to add insult to injury, the attorneys came in.
We're starting to have a little bit of difficulties hearing you, so
I'm sorry, I was moving away.
Yeah, okay.
We had attorneys that came in to Crystal Springs, and this is Representative Holloway's home district. They won an environmental tort claim for $28 million, and the lawyers left. Well, wait now, it didn't help the people. The lawyers left with $28 million. And not a house was cleaned up, not a piece of property was cleaned up, not one person was compensated. The payout for the people was $272. And one lady said she was happy to get her $272.
That's just criminal.
I agree with you. That should have been criminal. So what we have in Mississippi is we have attorneys that are pimping out our people.
Mm-hmm.
We have regulatory agencies that are ignoring our people. And then we have our people who remain ignorant and are dying.
Mm-hmm.
So we need to educate our people and ourselves. This is why we're in harm's way. This is why, you know, our women are having multiple miscarriages. This is why you can't bring your children successfully to term. You need to check and see what sort of environment you're living in. If you're experiencing health issues, it needs to become important enough for you to ask the question.
Now, last week, there was a press conference, I'm sorry, a press release that was issued, and, of course, it indicated, you know, your appointment as chairperson of this commission, but it was also to let people know about the petition. Now, in regards to the petition, is this just for folks in the Mississippi area, or is this a petition that you are requesting that anyone, any of us, are able to sign it?
Anybody, anywhere across the planet is welcome to sign this petition.
Mm-hmm.
We are being put in the position of trying to save ourselves, and without some really high up help, it's not going to happen.
Wonderful. So now, where can people go to get access to the petition, to sign the petition?
You can go to the COCEJ website at www.cocej.webs.com.
Okay, very good. And if you would, my sister, when you get the opportunity, if you will email me that information, we will also distribute it out through our listserv.
Thank you. I'll be more than happy to.
Very good. Very good. And also, please know that, you know, you have a open invitation to come on our show to provide updates or any other kind of information that you may want to present. We're here for you, and that's what we're here to do, to help keep our folks abreast and enlightened about as many and as much as possible.
Well, thank you so much for the invitation, and I hope I'm able to come back, and hopefully we can do an update and next month, and we can see how we're all doing.
Absolutely, absolutely. And we're going to send you some information because I don't know if you heard me announce it earlier, the Million Woman Movement is now full-fledged in terms of really now representing in the way that we had envisioned. And in December, we'll be doing the first summit, our first international summit, that will focus on many of the issues that we're talking about. But what we've learned is that when you are dealing with government kinds of things, it is so, as you well know, it is very difficult to do that effectively right here in the U.S. It just gets tied up, it gets stagnant, and sometimes goes nowhere. So what we now know is that we're in a very global, not only global market, but we're in a global reality. And so a lot of our concerns now have to be placed in other courts or in other arenas. So we certainly invite you to join us in December, because we will be bringing to our sisters throughout the diaspora. They'll be representing from many countries, as well as brothers will be attending too. But we are making certain that our sisters now take a very, very much needed role in the kinds of things that we all need to see happen today. And we feel that as mothers, our voices really can be heard in a very different kind of way. So we want to begin to bring that forward on an international level starting in December. It's the first of 5 summits. At the end of that 5th year, we are planning to then have in place an Africana Women's Federation so that we can be represented in any country and be represented well. So we certainly
hope that you will consider
joining us.
Yes, I will. Thank you.
Absolutely, absolutely. Because this is what we now have to do. We have to get out here and really educate our folks, edify our folks, really, because what has happened in the past, what we've learned, is that often people who have this information, it's not being matriculated into the hood or into the community. It's being discussed in areas and on levels that the masses of our people hear and know little to nothing about. And we've got to change that. And the time is now here. It's so obvious. The time is here for that. So we want to make certain that all of our people have access to as much information about these issues and the advocacy about it and what it is, that the plans about it, what are we going to do about it? Because, and that brings me to my next question, you know, is there any other proactive kinds of things that you might be looking at for in the future? I know some people are saying, well, you know, we can't rally but so much, or we can't demonstrate but so much, but I dare say, I don't believe that. I think every bit helps. In fact, I know it does, because we just went to Camp Hill on Thursday and presented a protest. It wasn't a real loud protest, but it certainly was a protest, and those people knew that it was. And the next day, Mumia was placed in general population. Now, that's not coincidental. He had been in the hole for 3 weeks. So, obviously, the voice of the people, the actions of the people can, in fact, work. And it took the people signing 5,000 signatures and a caravan of folk literally taking the time to go up there to hand deliver it, and to let them know we are not going to sit by and just watch them do this and say nothing. So what types of things do you foresee happening, or what types of things would you like to see maybe happen in the future in addition to the petition?
I'm going to hope that we can make our way to Washington, D.C. and have this meeting. And certainly here in Mississippi and in Alabama and in Florida and in Tennessee, we want to take our troubles to our state capitals. We want to stand on the steps and we want to tell them that you're poisoning us, you're killing our babies, and we want you to stop. And we want to say it loud, we want to say it clearly. So I foresee some state capitol rallies. We're certainly planning one here in Mississippi so that we can let our elected officials know that this is an issue that they need to address and do it in an expeditious manner.
Okay. Well, that certainly sounds like an excellent move. And I would strongly suggest, you know, if you haven't already, to, you know, make certain that some of these national talk shows, I'm not one to get too involved with some of the Negro people who, you know, talk about civil rights and so forth, but for the sake of PR, certainly to get the information to them might be, you know, helpful. Just, again, to get it circulated, to get to get it into as many arenas as possible. The local NAACP there, the local Urban League. Again, I don't personally get involved with these various groups because I've just seen too many deals that have been cut, and as a result, the people, our people, did not get what they really should have. So I don't waste a lot of time with them, but I strongly suggest that, again, for the sake of PR and getting information circulated, that you know, may be something that you may want to consider. And it helps to document these issues to a greater extent as well, because they do have access to the ability to document things. So I'm not sure if that's something you've already entertained, but, you know, if not, that may be something you want to look at in the near future.
Well, the NAACP took my report about infant mortality, put it in a small white paper they did, and presented it to the state legislature. I haven't heard anything else from them.
Right, and that's why, you know, again, my experience has been the local chapters tend to just, I don't know what the problem is, but I've noticed in many states, the local chapters just seem to be, you know, very, I don't even know what to call it. So with that said, that's a good word. I got some other ones, but that'll work for now. But again, the national tend to have shown a bit more responsibility and responsiveness. So I would strongly suggest, you know, writing to them, to Ben Jealous, or someone more on the executive body, because even though they have their local chapters and all of that, there's sometimes issues that really need to go directly to the national headquarters. And from what I'm seeing, the new leadership there has been a bit more inclined to respond a bit more progressively.
Well, we'll give them a shot and see if they're going, you know, to be responsive.
Right, right. I mean,
and
again, it is good to see if, in fact, they will respond, and if not, then we need to be responding to them. So there has to be some levels of accountability that now goes into effect where once we contact people, they can't just not respond and we don't say nothing. We need to make it known that this issue has been brought to your attention. We can document that it has been brought to your attention. And really, you have a responsibility to, if nothing else, at least say, well, we can't deal with this right now, or this is not an issue that's on our agenda for right now. You know, but to say nothing, that can't be tolerated any longer. And it needs to be exposed. But again, from what I've been seeing from the some of the new leadership for the NAACP, they seem to be just a bit more in tune to reality.
Well, on the Pennsylvania front, your listeners didn't know, there's a community up there that's been contaminated by a company called Kerr-McGee, and Kerr-McGee, a.k.a. Trinox, T-R-O-N-O-X, declared bankruptcy to try to avoid their environmental litigation. But there is a community in Pennsylvania that won their lawsuit to the tune of $52 million, and they need to be aware that May 15th or 17th, the bankruptcy court is having a trial, because I know the payments were stopped on that $52 million when they declared bankruptcy. And they need to make sure that they're aware that there is a trial so that they can make whatever arrangements that they need to make to be there to say we need to get paid.
Wow. If you would please forward me that information so that we can start getting that circulated as soon as possible. I had not heard anything about that at all.
I'll be more than happy to send you the information.
Wonderful, wonderful. In fact, and I'm sorry, what was the date on that again? Oh, May 15th. We'll do another show certainly before then, just to, again, bring some attention to that and to recap that and so forth. But, yes, this is the first I've heard of that. Unbelievable. Unbelievable. Okay, so we'll look forward to getting that information. Well, my sister, I thank you so much for taking the time to join us. And again, if we can get you on once a month, that would be wonderful. I mean, at least once a month. You know, they had to have an ongoing, regular kind of report. And you know, again, to help our listeners, our family listening audience, to know more about some of the things that we can begin to be more proactive about. Please give us your contact information. If we have some listeners in the Mississippi area, please feel free to get in contact with this sister. You know, I'm sure that there's a lot of work that has to be done. And even if you're not in the Mississippi area and you have some skills or some information that will be helpful or what have you, you know, please feel free to reach out to her. So please give them the information that where you can be reached.
I can be reached by email at cotejr4@yahoo.com. And I can be reached by phone at 601-955-2214.
Okay, very good. All right, so that is just, I'm so, so very glad to get this information, because this is a topic that you really don't hear, you know, a lot about, you know, coming from us. I mean, I listen to a lot of different shows just to kind of stay abreast of what's going on in the dialogue. And we're talking about food and, you know, other things, farming and, you know, the need to eat organic and this and that, gardening and so forth. But what we're not hearing much about in real talk and real language is this issue of the air that we're breathing, the water that we're actually drinking and utilizing, the soil. We're not really focusing to any real extent what's really going on with that, the types of toxins that are in it, the types of contamination that are in it. And for those who are in the Pennsylvania area, you know that just in Chester, PA, they had a lawsuit there a couple of years ago where, you know, it was so polluted the cancer rate was off the hook. And that's going on in a lot of states.
It is, and it really needs to stop being the dirty little secret.
Well, I'm sure that we have helped to bring some light to this issue tonight, and knowing my folks, you know, once they get information, they know what to do with it. They start really circulating it and investigating it and researching. So I'm sure the next dialogue that we have, we're going to have some folks that really have some questions ready for you. I don't see anyone raising their flag tonight to let me know that they have a question or comment, but I'm sure now that we put it out there, the next time we get you on, Susan, I'm sure there's going to be some other folks wanting to have some dialogue and you know, present some questions and possibly some, you know, some plans of action.
Very good. Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, indeed, indeed. And we look forward to getting you back on soon. And also for getting the information that you'll be sending to us soon, and we're going to get that circulated out as well.
Thank you.
All right, my sister. All right, family, we have been talking with Sister Tenny White, and we've been talking about the environment. We've been talking about, when we say the environment, you know, it's been said in other types of situations that your environment plays a major role in how you think and things that you do and so forth and so on. Well, certainly that hasn't necessarily been presented to the degree that it should be, in that if you are breathing air that is toxic, if you are drinking water that is contaminated, well, let me tell you, your environment is not just something that helps to determine, you know, how you're going to act or think. Your environment is going to determine how long you're going to live, if at all. So we need to be just a bit more proactive and a bit more responsible. And especially as Sister Tenny just said, you know, when it comes to children, especially babies, and also, oh, before you go, my sister, here's another area. When we talk about babies or children, then certainly that has to also have a major effect on the elders.
And it really does. You know, I've talked to so many ladies who've had fertility issues. They've had multiple miscarriages. They're living in contamination. And we've got all of these studies out here that EPA is fully aware of that simply says that some types of persistent environmental contamination is particularly bad for Black females. And they know this.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't tell the women.
Wow. See, this is why earlier we said that to begin to raise this issue of genocide in the United States, it's going to be a very critical thing. This is something that has been discussed in international courts over the past 40 years, but truly with the new developments in what we know has happened, particularly to our women, there's now a position that has not been able to or has not been presented before, at least not to any degree, of reality, and we now can do that. As we played earlier, there was a comment that was said in Mumia's commentary regarding the ruling that just occurred in North Carolina that clearly showed the United States government was complicit in the eugenics movement. And they literally were a part of encouraging, and not just encouraging, but coercing women to be sterilized. And some were sterilized without even knowing it. Okay? And they just, you know, said, yeah, we did that, and now get ready to try to pay somebody between $10,000 and $50,000, the survivors. So we as women, as black women, as women of African descent, we must not allow that to go just like, okay, we just want to give you a couple of dollars, a fistful of dollars. No, this has to be presented to show the type of mentalities that we're dealing with here, that these people really had the intent to reduce our population. And that is a clear, anyone that's familiar with genocide and how it's defined, that is one of the clear elements for genocide, when you attempt to reduce the population of a people.
Then that's what we're experiencing now, to deliberately leave us in environmental contamination that we've been experiencing for decades, and to understand some of the effects. Whether they're effects for our brain development, our effects for our reproductive development, and to simply leave us in this contamination and actively ignore our cries, it's a death sentence.
Wow. What type of, what things do you do at your laboratory?
Right now, we are doing primarily environmental consulting. So we take analytical data that EPA, we can squeeze out of EPA, and we translate it for the communities at our community meetings, and we let them know that this level that EPA has found in your community is not healthy for you.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll wait. EPA investigations here in Mississippi will take upwards of anywhere from 2 to 12 years. In the meantime, people are still living in the environmental contamination. So primarily we're doing environmental consulting. We do asbestos and lead analysis because one of the things that needs to be noted about lead is this, that our National Institutes of Health commissioned a study that said there was a link between women over 65 experiencing heart attacks and their level of lead that they would encounter in their home environment, especially if their homes were painted with lead-based paint. So if they had some elevated lead or they were encountering it on a daily basis, that was a causative factor for them to have heart attacks.
Wow. What would you suggest if we were to, you know, really look at how to train folk or how to increase our levels of activism? How would you suggest we begin to maybe do some of that?
You want to begin at the local level. You want to let your mayor know that you know that there's unacceptable levels of environmental contamination in your community. And you want to ask them, what are they going to do about it?
Mm-hmm.
That's the first place to start. We have literally stepped up the line from local elected officials to county, to state, to federal, because it really takes that amount of dedication and that amount of persistence before you can get someone, you can reach someone who can make a difference.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you're in a community, you're experiencing unacceptable levels of environmental contamination, first let the people that you elect from your community know, your city council persons, your mayors, let them know first that you know, and now they know you know, and what are you going to do? And then expect a response. And then link that to their ability to become elected next time they're out fishing and coming by to shake your hand and kiss your baby, and they need your vote. And you need to let them know that we didn't receive any help from you when we came, and it wasn't time for you to see us for a vote.
Wow, that's an excellent suggestion. And so these are some of the things that certainly we'll be more responsible in doing as we proceed with, you know, building in our community and providing information that now we let people know. We need to start asking more questions. We need to find out who's on these committees in our community. Who is it that sits on the environmental committee? And where are the reports? What's being said? So that I think that's an excellent idea and a good start. So, we're going to make sure we begin to put that out there to our people so that we can begin to start getting some of that data in. Okay. Now, are you familiar with, because I think some months ago I ran across a group called the National Black Environmentalist Organization or something like that. Have you ever heard of them?
I have heard of them. And, in fact, I think a couple of months ago I sent them some contact information and emailed them how to access our website. And I am not I haven't received anything back from them yet.
Okay.
So I know they're trying to start the dialogue on the national level that we have some serious environmental concerns in the United States.
Okay. Maybe that could be a future show where we invite a representative from their group and get you on. And maybe one of the elected officials from somewhere, and let's see what we can maybe come up with.
I'm amenable to anything that's going to help get the word out that we have some problems that require all of us. They require our attention so that they can be addressed.
Okay. Well, we will definitely look to see if we can make that show happen, because I think this is an issue that definitely needs, not only further examination, but we need to provide more insight and continual dialogue about it. And we need to kind of stay on top of it. So, yeah, we're going to definitely look to see if we can contact someone from their group, the National Black Environmentalist Group. And also maybe, you know, see if we can find some of the more vocal advocates that might be in the black elected official arena and see what we come up with. So if you have any suggestions, my sisters, of anyone else that you think we might can bring into that dialogue, please feel free to let us know.
I really don't know of anyone off the top of my head right now. I'll scout around, and because part of the problem with trying to get an elected official to go on the record and actually talk about this issue is that then he's made a commitment. So.
Sure. Well, you know, every now and then, you know, things can happen. I've seen situations where we've had what they call whistleblowers, you know.
Yeah.
Every now and then someone pops up and is ready to spill the beans or is ready to talk about something. So, you know, all we can do is keep our ears and our eyes open, and who knows, we may be able to tap into someone who has some information or finally have a guilty conscience or something and is ready to do some talking. But we'll certainly keep our eyes open for that. Well, Sister Tania, I thank you so much again for taking the time to join us this evening. And again, we look forward, I look forward to having you back on real soon.
Well, thank you. And I hope to be able to join you again. And certainly we want to try to make this at least a monthly meeting. And we can keep each other updated about what's going on in our community.
All right, all right. So before you leave, is there some final words you'd like to share with our family before you leave us for tonight?
And I'm in this struggle, and it is an environmental civil rights and an environmental racism struggle. It didn't just go away. Do not think for one moment that we have one civil rights. We have not. Essentially, what's happening with these people that are fence lines to environmental contamination is they are working slaves. And we need to try to free our working slaves.
Wow, that's right. Well, without much more to say about that, I think it requires some action, and hopefully, you know, those who are listening, in fact, I know, not hopefully, I know that many who are listening are really about some action. So, again, we're going to get information out to you all very soon to do some follow-up here, and we're going to have some more dialogue about the environment and what it is that we as black folks need to be doing. You know, again, there is a responsibility. There is a responsibility to take care of you. There's also a responsibility to assure that the future, that those incoming generations will have less of a problem to deal with. They're going to have their hands full anyway, just in general, but we need to do our part to make certain that that it's not as bad as it certainly looked like it's going to be. So these are things that we can and must do today. So, Sister, again, thank you so, so very much. And we're going to definitely have you back on very soon.
Thank you. Good night.
Good night. All right, family, again, we were just talking with Sister Tenny White, and again, we've been talking about the environment. We've been talking about what it is that we as people of African descent can and must begin to do. And, wow, we thank all of you for allowing us to talk to you this evening. And before we close out for tonight, we want to again remind you that Mumia Abdul-Jamal is, in fact, in general population. Can you imagine? This is the first time in roughly 30 years that Mumia has been able to be around people. He has been on death row for 30 years, and in that has been in confinement 23 hours a day. And finally, after 30 years, that is no longer happening. So we are very, very thankful for that. And we want to remind you all again that there are still political prisoners that really need our support, need our help. I got a call earlier from Sister Pam Africa and Sister Omi and Brother Rafikan and Sister Basima. They all went up to the annual political prisoners dinner up in New York that took place earlier today and said that it was incredible as usual. So we want to remind all of you again that we know that there are millions, actually, of our people who are incarcerated. And certainly those dungeons is no place for anyone, and certainly no place for our people. But what we also know, too, is that political prisoners are folk who made conscious decisions to fight the system, to fight against injustice. And so, you know, we have a responsibility, again, to respond to them, because as with Harriet Tubman, forgot to tell you about that too. We have now a cadre called Araminta's Children. And Araminta's Children is about the history of our people, particularly the history of the Underground Railroad. But we'll tell you more about that in a few moments. But the idea of Mother Harriet Tubman, of Araminta, that was also Mother Harriet Tubman's name. This was someone who had obtained their freedom. She was free, or at least, you know, that's what that was called during that time period, and made a conscious decision to go back into harm's way in order to get our people, to get others, to help others. And so that's what we're saying about this issue with political prisoners. These were people who did not have to do things because, oh, they had to do it. Well, they did have to based on their own consciousness. But the fact is they did these things to help others. They fought and spoke out to help others, to help our people. And they are now incarcerated as a result of that, not because of anything else, but because they spoke up or stood up when it came to fighting for justice for people of African descent. So, again, we want to remind you that it is so necessary, it is so very, very necessary that we do the right thing. Dr. Matula Shakur, Sundiata Kole, Russell Schultz, I mean, there's so many. Go to the Jericho Movement website if you are interested in learning more, or contact us at nationalmwm@aol.com, nationalmwm@aol.com, or you can call us at area code 267-636-3802. Before we close out, we want to say thank you to all of the people who went up to Camp Hill on Wednesday. Courageous group of folk, and I can tell you, as I said earlier, for a minute I thought I was in down south somewhere, because those folk remind you of that whole vibe, that whole mentality. That's what we were confronted with. And so it was a wonderful thing to, you know, see our people not being afraid, and ready to take care of business, and that's pretty much what happened. Sister Johanna was excellent as usual. I was hoping to have the letter that she wrote on the spot, because these people denied our request in seeing someone who's in an official capacity to receive the 5,000 signatures in demanding that Mumia be placed in general population. But Sister Johanna and the attorney and others decided that they would write a letter and let the officials know that we were there, why we were there, and that we were, in fact, requesting a meeting with them. And so the letter was written and then given to the administrative person there. And I tell you, the letter was short, sweet, but it was powerful. And obviously so, because the next day, Mumia was processed in order to go into general population. So, again, we are so thankful for those who came to the press conference on Thursday, and then, of course, who went up to the prison. Again, it was a throwback, really, because if you've ever seen some TV, some kind of show on TV, or heard a story about, you know, going into a country area and confronting a certain type of mentality that white folks have historically been known for, well, that's what we saw when we went up to Camp Hill. But nevertheless, things have worked out. We now have to move on to the next step, which is, of course, to bring Mumia home, and that will happen. We know that it will happen. Just as we saw Geronimo Pratt be released, we know that we will also see Mumia released, and we will not stop until he is released. So I want to remind you that in April the 24th, there will be some major activities happening in regard to the Free Mumia campaign, as there is every year. We'll be giving you more information about that as we get closer to that. And just to kind of move to another topic for a moment, I want to also thank those brothers in Trenton, New Jersey, also in other parts of New Jersey who are coming forward and answering the call. A few here in Philly, too. But the bottom line is the issue of violence and abuse of our women and girls. Well, for some strange reason, the 10,000 men in Philly or whatever have been missing in action. And we're going to make sure that we bring that issue to the forefront come May the 12th, I believe. We're having a major rally here in Philadelphia to bring attention to the issue of violence and abuse, or what we call violations of our women and girls, and why the anti-violence groups and organizations and advocates don't seem to want to deal with the issue of gender-related violence. Why? Well, you're going to, trust me. So we're going to make certain that we begin to raise that question, because the increase of violation of our women and girls can no longer be tolerated. This whole thing about guns and gangs and all of that, we know that that has to be dealt with, but you are not going to any longer push us to the side and act like, oh, well, this is not something that needs to be dealt with. Yes, it does, and it is. So, again, we thank those brothers who have stepped up and let it be known. They're not scared, and they're not going to just be silent because they know the truth. And for those who don't know the truth, remember, no nation, community, family, or whatever you want to call it, can rise any higher than its women. Now, some of you may not like that, but unfortunately, it is the truth. And so here at New Day Resurrection Liberation, we speak truth to power. Well, family, we have run out of time for tonight. We want to thank Sister Tenny White again for joining us. We certainly thank all of you, and hopefully you will continue to tune in. Please remember, we need your support. Please become a member. We have membership for brothers, too, so it's not just the sisters, but we certainly welcome our sisters to join us now and build this movement. Until next week, family, we leave you with the idea and the concept of Ma'at-Hotep, because remember, as we strive for peace, because we're such a peaceful, loving people, but there can be no peace without justice. There can be no Hotep without Ma'at. Until next week or thereabouts, Ma'at-Hotep. Aluta continua.